This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 116, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, the Netflix, and FooComics.com. Foo! Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 116. I'm Connor. I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Josh.
And everyone just stopped listening.
It's like nobody realizes that it's a contest amongst the three of us to shock each other on the opening. You know?
You did.
I win. At iFanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics. And one of us has a really stressful week, but they do the Pick of the Week anyway. They write about it on the website. And then they talk about it on the podcast, along with various other emails and voicemails of areas of interest. And they're back this week. So before we get to the show, a quick reminder, this is a review show for the week's books. So there's going to be spoilers. We're going to talk about plot lines. And we're going to tell you that Darth Vader is Luke's father and all that stuff. And then we get on with the show. So, Ron had the pick of the week. Take it away, Ron.
Thank you very much, Connor. It's good to be back. Yeah, no, I did have a bit of a stressful week.
You didn't go anywhere.
No, my. I know, exactly. My non-comics life kind of turned up a notch this week, but it's okay. I still got my books, and I did the pick. And I had about 14 books, I think, this week, so I had a big old stack to read through on Wednesday. And you know, and it's funny because I picked Fell number 9, written by Warren Ellis and illustrated by Ben Templesmith. And I thought it was really funny because when I was going to do it, I was like, you know, we haven't talked about Fell in forever. And then I was
why
like,
is that?
And then I was like, God, when was the last time we picked it? And I went and I looked and we picked issue number 8, which happened to have been in April 2007. So immediately when I saw that, I wanted to not count this because I didn't want to reward that type of behavior. I didn't want to, you know, say, hey, you know, you're putting a book out whenever the hell you want it. Here's a medal. You know, I didn't want to do that because I hate that part of the business, you know. But the thing is that as I went through the rest of my books and I was like, well, this is pretty good. This is whatever. I kept coming back to Fell because Fell amazes me in that I feel like it's not an anomaly. I think it's an example of what comics can be. It's $1.99. All right. Admittedly, it's 16 pages of comic story and 20 pages total if you count the back matter. But I don't notice that.
No, you don't at all. Not for the minute.
Exactly. Nope. And then on top of that, Warren Ellis, who I'm hit or miss with, you know, some stuff I really like, some stuff I can do without, some stuff I just think is whatever. Warren Ellis is able to write this story that is so. Each issue is kind of one and done, but it continues the story of Detective Richard Fell, who's a police officer in Snow, who gets transferred to this dead-end town of Snowtown. And he writes these stories that are so evocative and so touching on social issues and personal issues and things like that in 16 pages. And then on top of that, Ben Templesmith, who I knew Ben Templesmith, and I saw 30 Days Night, and I'm kind of, you know, summarizing my written review on iFanboy.com here, but every issue...
He's got no brain cells left.
Yeah, so cut me some fucking slack, okay?
You should just read it word for word.
No, but the thing about Ben Templesmith that is amazing is that, like, it seems so simple what he's doing, but it's so elegant at the same time.
No, it's not simple at all.
No, it's not simple, and every issue there's some visual element that is just kind of blows me away. And this time around, Detective Fell goes to negotiate with somebody who apparently has held people hostage, and they use the device of visualizing what's going through Fell's head as he's trying to size up the guy behind on the other side of the door. So when he's talking to him, he sees that he's you know saying he's a big man with heavy boots, and you see a kind of a stick figure on the door with like heavy boots, and as he's moving, as he undoes his gun, you see he just unsafetied the handgun and stuff like that, and you see as Fell is trying to talk this guy down. And he essentially, you know, has a quick kind of small firefight, talks the guy down, and finds out that he's not holding hostage. He's a poor soldier who comes home to find his parents dead. And then it becomes not a story about the hostage taker, but about why didn't this guy's parents get the service or the treatment they deserve from the hospital. And Fell basically delivers justice to the person who deserves it, which is the hospital. Which it's a gut punch, and it was just... Just it got me, and I'm like, you know, nothing else is being done with this quality and in this kind of this use of space and this use of just like total economy of words and art, and it just I'm just every issue amazes me, and even better is the iFanboy audience made us read it because I didn't yep. I wasn't even paying it any mind, and this is one of the best comics out there. So
you know what's really cool about this book, and I think that last thing about them getting us to read it really has a lot to do with that, is that I'm starting to realize that moving on, the best Warren Ellis work doesn't seem like Warren Ellis work.
Yes.
What I mean is when you read a Warren Ellis superhero book, you kind of know what you're in for. Like he puts sort of a spin on his superhero books that is the kind of thing that people really like.
It's also very sardonic and
detached. I think that's really easy for him.
Yep.
So like I think he kind of phones that stuff in, whereas like this doesn't. I couldn't read this and tell you, oh, that's like Warren Ellis.
No,
I would disagree with that, but I think there's two sides of him. There's the easy superhero phone in side that he writes, you know, at the pub without thinking about it. I think this stuff is something he really takes his time with, and I don't think that's why it's delayed. I think there's probably lots of reasons why it's delayed, but it's you can tell there's a lot more effort in this than there is in Ultimate Human number 1,
mm-hmm. right.
which is also enjoyable, but for different reasons.
Yeah. Sure. But this doesn't have like that same – like he seems to really like finding vulgar ways to say things or like to talk about beating people up in a certain – you know, like he, like that's his kind of thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he's got all these synonyms for hitting people and just, you know, different kind of ways to have characters swear at each other. But he kind of – like this is so subdued. It just takes that edge off of everything and it's just left with – it's very raw. And yeah. I love that about this book. I mean if you actually look through the book, it's – you know, every panel is basically Richard Fell's head.
Yeah.
But it's still interesting. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know? And also, like, I can't remember him doing a crime book, really, on anything else.
Oh, I haven't thought about that, actually. Yeah.
I guess he did, like, there was a book he did called Down and another one called Red. I think one of those was a crime book. I don't remember exactly.
Red was a spy.
Then it was Down, I think.
Yeah.
But what I just think is amazing is that quite often we're often pontificating about the industry and comics and what they can be, whatever. And like I said, I think this is a great example of you can hand, like the trade paperback that came out, you can hand that to somebody and they'll be in disbelief that it's a comic book because it's not a superhero book. It's not any of those cliches. It doesn't look like anything they've ever seen. And it's an accessible story that everybody can, to me, this is better than half the procedural crime crap that's out there on TV and stuff like that, because it's admittedly I'm biased because I like the format and stuff than the medium, but like it just seems so honest and so, relatable and just kind of, it's amazing how I'm just amazed at how it plays with dark and light and how there's really no, I don't say redeeming qualities, but there's nothing I like about Snowtown or that I like about these people. And yet you find yourself feeling for them.
Richard Fell has redeeming qualities.
Yeah, no, he does. Yeah,
he's a bit of a jerk, but he's not a bad person.
No, he takes no shit.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And what's great is that he does the right thing, and it's definitely playing on that desire to be a better person kind of thing. And you can only wish, given in that situation, you could have the balls to carry two dead bodies into a hospital and drop them on the administrator's desk. But yeah, no. So it's just like Fell just represents to me like what comics can be. They can be $1.99. They can be satisfying. They can be beautiful. They can be different. And so it kind of gives me hope. So
hey, if every comic was this dense for 16 pages, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, totally. So
and $1.99 is great. And no other comic looks like this.
Yeah.
Right now that I'm buying, this is completely unique to itself.
Yep.
Too bad. I mean, it's just too bad we're getting one and almost one a year now.
Well, yeah. Well, you can only hope that they had that run of the first. I mean, the trade picked up the first seven issues, right?
Eight.
Oh, so it did the first eight. So they did the first eight, yeah. Then they did the trade. So I can only hope that this is the beginning of the next trades batch.
The trade is even cheaper.
Yeah,
the trade is $15 for eight issues. That's less than $2 an issue.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, go get
and
if you're not reading Fell, there's no excuse anymore.
Not just, really. Yeah. If you like anything Warren Ellis has done. And you're not reading Fell, then you're missing out on his best work.
Well, I'd say if you like comics,
and there are some, there are some people who don't like the nihilistic Warren Ellis stuff. But this is the Warren Ellis stuff with a heart. This is the stuff. This is who I think he really is. Besides his public persona, inside is Richard Fell, more and Spider Jerusalem, because they both had they underneath their gruff exterior, they both had a lot of heart and hope in humanity. And there's a lot of that in this.
Yeah. So it was good, but I'll be honest with you, it was a tough pick because I hate the lateness thing, but I don't know if more issues are coming. They could be. I hope they are. I hate the lateness thing, but also there was one other book that really came really close.
Well, this is the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's kind of hard to say.
It's the exact opposite end of the spectrum.
And that book was Booster Gold #6.
It occupies the end of the spectrum that revels in the love of superheroes and crazy
and
histories.
And does it well. That's the thing.
Yep.
That's the trick. Is that like? And so Booster Gold #6, Josh, are you reading this? Or no? You're not reading it,
nope.
Are you? Okay,
no.
So me and Connor will talk for a little bit. Booster Gold #6 did the issue that I hoped it wouldn't do, in that this is where Booster goes with the other Blue Beetles through time to go save Ted Kord.
Well, that was the whole...
Yep.
In the beginning, the first issue, Booster Gold agreed to go with Rip Hunter on this whole – to be the time cop.
Yep.
On the pretense that he would get to save Ted Kord's life at some point. And Rip Hunter's been saying for 5 months, you can't do that.
You can't, yeah.
And now he's going to do that.
Right. And so I didn't want to see that happen because I hate when they undo things. And I thought Ted Kord's death was important and all that kind of
stuff.
Well,
there's no way they were going to undo it.
Right, yeah. But they did. They saved Ted Kord.
He's not going to be on. He's going to find out, which is what Rip Hunter said, is you can't say change time.
Well, so it
he's
going
to die.
It ends with the Blue Beetles saving, going back to the moment where what's his name,
Max Lord
kills Blue Beetle. They stop it. Booster Gold saves him, and then they pull him in and they say, but nobody can know that you're dead. So he's gonna be like Booster Gold.
No one can know you're alive.
No one can know. I'm sorry. No one can know you're alive. And so he's gonna be like Booster Gold, the greatest hero that nobody can know about. You know, so it ends with this up note, and I got all excited because if they make this a buddy book between, you know, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, that's awesome. But then I looked at the cover and I realized that the book is called Booster Gold. So
yeah.
So, but it was still really good. I mean, Cotton Dewberry, well, was it not? Was it?
It was really good, and it was a lot of good moments in it. And Booster Gold and Blue Beetle have one of the great friendships in comics, and there was
relationships. Yeah.
One panel appearance by your buddy Starman Josh and
Jack Knight.
Jack Knight, and
you know they're not allowed. There's a contractual agreement in James Robinson's. He's not. No one's allowed to use Starman unless he okays it.
He doesn't say anything. He just appears
for one panel. He just
right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. They go past him in the time stream, and you know it was a lot, really heartfelt. You can imagine what it feels like to have a chance to save your best friend and to fight anything to get that chance. And I just don't believe for a second that they're going to succeed because that's the whole point of this book. So. Yeah. While I thought it was an up note at the end, it was also bittersweet because, you know, he's only going to get a little brief time with his friend before he dies again. It's got to happen that way.
Did you?
The next issue is the crossover no one wanted is the Zero Hour.
Yeah, which crossover. Which I can't wait for. By the way, did you notice when Booster and the Blue Beetles are leaving? Did you see the Abbey Road panel? Yeah. Okay.
I said, why are they doing the Beatles? Oh, that's
get
why.
It, the Beatles. Yeah. I feel like there's probably a lot more Beatles references in here that I just didn't catch, but I thought that was funny. I mean, it just seems like Jeff Johns and the other dude, Jeff Katz, seem to be really enjoying themselves, but not in a self-indulgent kind of way. And
no, they're telling good, heartfelt stories. This is not. It's not DC porn,
right? Yes, exactly. But it also kind of is, though. I mean, that's the thing. It's accessible DC porn. Like somebody like you, who's a big DC person, is loving this, but you don't need to be the DC-aphile to enjoy it. You know, so
right.
That's Jeff Johns' signature.
Yeah, and
I mean that's JSA. That's Green Lantern.
And
really,
I haven't seen Dan Jurgens' art this good in years.
He's gotten a lot better since this book started. Yep.
Helps with Norm Rapman finishing it, though. So
yeah, the only bad note to look for in the future is Jeff Johns did a really good interview with Comic Book Resources 2 weeks ago, and he's leaving this book.
No shit, really? I missed that.
Yeah.
Damn it.
He can only juggle so many books, and this is the one that's going to go.
Well,
so.
We'll enjoy it while we can. You know.
Yeah.
So. It's the one I'm not reading. Woohoo!
Yeah, well, what are you reading, Josh?
I was in B. Claymore territory this week.
Yeah.
Did you guys pick up either of those books?
I picked both of them up.
What were the books?
We got Hawaiian Dick number 2 of many, and then 76 number 1, which is sort of a double feature kind of book.
That one.
And I'm going to guess, Josh, that you liked Hawaiian Dick still, and 76 really wasn't up your alley.
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, good.
I liked Hawaiian Dick 2 less than I'd like the first one, because the plot didn't really go anywhere. Although
the art is beautiful.
The art is amazing in these books. Stephen Griffin is just coloring the hell out of these.
Yeah.
The coloring actually stands out more to me than the actual art. And the art's good. It's by Scott Chandler, who did the Northwest Passage. And I really like the style, but like, just the combination of the art and the colors together, I mean, it's actually overshadowing every. I never think that about books.
Yeah.
I think this will be a fun story when it's all done. The second part didn't really have a whole hell of a lot to talk about.
I really like the thing about both Hawaiian Dick and 76, and it's similar to what Remender's doing with Fear Agent and some of the stuff like that, is the entire comic now has become an experience. And I think that's really what makes, you know, when we argue between the issues and the trade paperbacks, you open up Hawaiian Dick, and I mean, even down to the, you know, like the printed in Canada with love kind of thing on the title page, the whole title page where they tell who the characters are, then the single page with the story so far, and then all the back kind of supporting material where like how there's a short story, there's the B. Claymore's Guide to Bird's World, and then there's the other dude, Professor Griffin Explains, you know, like
yeah.
the entire book has become an experience, And yeah, they did it with 76 too, where they have playlists and the inside title page of 76 was a list of all the things that happened in 1976, and in the back there was like their playlists of music, and like it was just the whole thing is just it kind of envelops you in what that story is, and I love that, you know. So
did you think for a second that they stole Gordon the intern and put him in Professor Griffin Explains? If you look at that, I was like, why is Gordon in this book? Oh, it doesn't really look like him, but. No, I mean, the thing is, I didn't love this issue to death, but I will buy a book like this every time.
Yeah,
because it's doing something different with the comic book form. You're absolutely right. Like, there's love just on all the pages, and there's sort of all these different things for you to get into. He looks like Tom Wilson. we're saying B. Clay Moore looks like Biff from Back to the Future. It's not an.
I'm sure he's gonna love that.
It was in the Twitter thing this week.
Oh, okay.
But there's no books like this.
Yeah.
And I love that. And it's comic booking. And then, you know, to move on to 76 number one, what you've got here is basically it's a double feature. There's two stories in this book. They both take place in 1976. There's one story called
Jackie Karma,
that's by B. Clay Moore and art by Ed Tatum, which takes place in 1976 in New York City, and then the story switches and it's Cool by Seth Peck and Ty Walker, which takes place in Los Angeles in 1976. What did you guys think?
I want to hear what
it was. Okay,
yeah,
it was all right. I liked it. I mean, I didn't. The first story is about the return of some ass kicking dudes who were gone from the neighborhood for some reason. One is a bum, and something happens, and we don't really know what. And the bum has been convinced to now shave his mustache and beard and put on his ass kicking clothes and go back into the neighborhood, and we don't know what that means. And then the second story is about some bounty hunters who have caught a bad case.
Yeah.
Or are catching a bad case, and it was okay. I just think the problem with these double features comics and these stories is they're so short. It's hard to really get a feel if you're going to like them or not.
Yeah, though that's definitely true.
Yeah,
I gotta say I was a little more impressed by Cool.
Yeah, Cool was a better one.
Oh, that's so funny because I actually like Jackie Karma better than Cool.
Jackie Karma to me felt kind of like a retread of like a. I don't know. I felt like I was reading Luke Cage and Iron Fist out of costume.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, and admittedly, it might be driven by the fact that I love the name Jackie Karma for some reason. I just think that's a great character name.
Yeah. His name's like Carmichael or something like that.
But the thing that did it for me was I didn't really like the art in Cool as much.
I
thought the art much better in Cool.
Oh man, there's some great pages in this book. There's where. At the beginning, like the two guys pull up to a house, and the one guy goes upstairs to knock on the door, and just the faces that he did and the story that he's telling in that, and then the next page is that guy getting thrown out of a window while the other guy in the foreground is on the phone.
Yeah,
I thought it was a really fun page, and they had like basically the freeze frames.
Like that as a device. What I didn't like about the art in Cool by Ty Walker. I didn't really like the faces. They kind of reminded me of like Mad Magazine faces, especially towards the end, like when the guy with the shirt off with the mustache type thing. They reminded me of those kind of over expressive Mad Magazine artists, which I know some people really like. It's not really for me, but I did like the freeze frames. I did like some of the devices used in it and stuff like that. So yeah.
Apparently both of these artists are pretty new up and comer guys.
Yeah.
I really like the art in the second story. The art in the first story I did like. It was really kind of gritty and dirty and God, those are buzzwords that I don't want to say anymore. I did lose track a little bit of which dude I was looking at.
Yeah, because there's two blonde dudes with facial hair. And
yeah, in fact, like, even Connor, you made when you summarized it like the Jackie Karma. I didn't get was the bum. I thought it was the lawyer.
I don't think it was. It is the lawyer. It's a different character.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's Jay Carmichael was the lawyer, and the bum happens to be blonde and with the beard, but we don't see him shave or anything.
Because there's three guys who were ass kickers.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, that's a problem there.
To an interview.
Yeah. So, but
so basically, three guys got split up. The one guy became a bum. The one guy went away and became a pimp, apparently, and then the other one is a lawyer.
Yeah.
I guess. So.
Who knows? I like the concept. I like the idea of the double feature. I enjoyed it. I mean, it depends. We'll see how often it comes out. But I dug it. I mean, like it definitely plays to the Tarantino, you know, kind of, you know, like reliving the period genre type thing and you know, like that sort of thing. But it's doing it well, and I was impressed by it, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that this has a chance to get better. You know, each story only had 12 pages, so
right. It's hard to It's funny because my theme for the week for my comics, I like to theme my weeks. And this week was just fun. It was just like I had fun reading my comics this week. Like there was just a lot between, you know, except for Fell, which was whatever, a little serious. But like Booster Gold was fun, Hawaiian Dick was fun, 76 was fun, and like what really summarizes fun for me out of the whole stack was Fear Agent number 18. I had so much fun reading that book. It's not even funny. Like it's, you know.
Yeah, I would say I was a little. I kept trying to figure out the math on when all this stuff happened, and I think I lost track of what the Fear Agent timeline is.
Right.
Because the first thing is sort of a flashback of when they were colonizing Earth, but that was 10 years ago, and the girl was a kid. Anyway, right. When they sort of got away from that, and then we were back to the Heath Houston story, I really did feel it was a lot stronger for that part.
Yeah.
And I thought that part was so much fun. He did a really great job with the character, basically Heath and the other guy who's married to Heath's ex-wife, basically, are forced to fight like gladiators on this alien world.
Which is such a cliche kind of thing to do, but it was good.
Oh, but it was done so well.
Yeah.
Because the one guy looks like he's gonna start fighting him, and you basically find out he's got ulterior motives. I don't want to give it away for anybody, but just what you think you're seeing, you aren't, and it ended. It was kind of heartbreaking. Like you're like, oh Jesus, that's awful, and that's this book is it runs you through the emotional ringer, sort of with the high adventure. Everything's just sort of amped up a little higher than it maybe would be normally.
And Jerome Opeña's art, I thought, like last issue, I was like, I want Tony Moore, but this issue, I was like, this is good.
I actually checked to see if it was Tony Moore who was drawing it.
Oh, really?
Like, I went back. I was like, I don't think he's doing this one. No, this guy's still good, though.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
like,
great
dynamic panels and just action and just, it's such a good book.
Now, Connor, can you tell me what episode that music was from?
The episode number or name? No, I can't.
The Gamesters of Triskelion.
I didn't know.
Are you talking about Star Trek?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Spock and Kirk have to fight each other in an arena type thing and the music.
We're going to do that in episode 58 of the Fanboy Show.
Don't give it away!
We throw our shirts off and pull out two knives.
Does it have to involve the shirts being off?
I know, Kirk with his shirt off. Oh, God. Anyway, but Fear Agent, it brought out like that same kind of feel. That's one of my favorite Star Trek episodes. And this one, you know, like it's this great outer space kind of thing that just is so, you know, a blast to read, you know. So,
that's the one trade I'm looking forward to the most next,
because you're not reading in issues, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh,
I think it's
going
to read real no I think it's going to read real nicely in trade. It's fun in issues, but I think that some of the issues that I was talking about, I think it'll probably work out a little better,
the losing track of the timeline and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into our next book, Two Guns, number 5, issue 5 of 5 of the Boom Studios miniseries from Stephen Grant.
You got to say it the right way, like Augie does, from Boom Studios.
that's his thing.
I know.
I don't like to steal gags.
I can't do it as good as him, so yeah, you're right.
Okay. I don't know about this book. I think it would read really good in trade. The reason being is because every issue, this comic is about let me explain why my problem, then I can explain why I don't know what the comic's about. It feels like there's two guys, and there's a bank heist, and there's some Mexican bad guys, and there's a bunch of FBI agents, and there's some military people. And every issue, it feels like somebody's double-crossed somebody, somebody's stabbed somebody in the back, somebody's changed sides. By the time I've gotten here, and these issues have been delayed since they've come out, I don't know who's doing what to who or what's happening. And I don't know who.
And there's a Mexican, and
I just know that by the end, I was double-crossed by this book.
Ooh. Well, so we should back up. This is written by Stephen Grant. Who's
he's got some opinions.
Yeah, and Connor, you really like him, right? So
no, I like him, and I think if I had all these issues at once and could read them straight through, I'd have a better sense of what's happening.
So it was written by Stephen Grant. It was drawn by Matt Santaluco. And what's funny about this is that I think, Connor, I think I knocked you off your chair when I told you I wanted to talk about it, this issue, because you didn't know I was reading it.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah,
I was all alone for these many months.
Yeah, no, I've been reading it since issue one, because the typography of the logo and just the covers really got me from the early.
The cover's fantastic.
Yeah, the cover's fantastic. I think the art is good.
It's good Sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's really not good, but it averages out in the middle.
Now what's interesting is that like I happen to really like this issue because at one point there's literally a scene where there's like four people and like eight guns and they're just pointing at each other nonstop, and like it was and it got to the point where it was almost comical, you know. And
that's
like,
it's comical. Man, I don't know what's happening anymore.
Exactly,
it's just guns. They're just pointing at each other, and I don't know why. I don't know where the stakes are. The money's missing. I don't know who even had the money to begin with or where it came from. There was a bank robbery. I know it came from there, but other than that,
You know what it felt like to me? It felt like a couple of months ago, my dad called me up and said, "You've got to rent The Transporter." He's like, "It's a fantastic movie." And I was just like, I had never heard of it. I didn't know who Jason, whatever his name is, Jason Statham is. And so I'm like, all right, you know, I trust my dad's a smart guy. Like, I trust him. So I Netflixed The Transporter. I watch it. And I'm like, an hour into it, and I'm like laughing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I'm like, all it is it's car chases and fights. There's no plot. There's no story. I don't know what's going on. But wow, did you see that car chase? You know, like, and to me, this is what it felt like watching The Transporter, this series. And for that case, it was worth $2.99. It was fun. You know,
it was fun.
$3.99. It was $3.99. God damn it.
Yeah, and I think if I pulled them all out, the problem is it's been so long, half the issues are in storage.
Yeah.
If I had them all at once and read them through, I think it would probably be a really good heist. The problem is when you have these many twists and turns through every issue.
It's hard.
You lose track after two or three month delays and things like that. It gets hard to keep track.
Yeah, well, but that said, I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, so I could see that point. Admittedly, I'm gonna be honest in that I did reread the last three issues over the Christmas break, so I was kind of caught up.
Ah, see, there you go.
So because so whatever. But
anyway, I saw a lot of people got shot in this one.
I know there was.
I'm not really sure why.
And it's like somebody gets shot and somebody's upset, but then they're fine in the next panel. Like there was no. Yeah, it just felt like an action movie, you know. Like so, I don't know. So if you like The Transporter, go get two guns. and I don't even know if anybody reads Boom books, but I want to check them out. Now that Wade's the editor in chief, I think it's worth checking out. So
I hate that they're $4 and don't seem to come out.
I know.
Like they have a lot of things come out, and then there's no follow up. That's happened a lot.
Yeah. Well, I want to check out that Cover Girl trade just came out. The premise of that seemed interesting. So I don't know. But anyway.
Well, the most interesting thing about this book, Two Guns, is that I was hanging out with my sister, and I handed her my stack of books, and I said, if you just looked solely at the covers, which one would you be most likely to read? And you know, and you guys know my sister. She was like, crap, sucks, lame.
Nerd.
And then she said, Two Guns. She picked out Two Guns. She said, if I was going to read anything, I'd read this one. So,
nice. Oh, interesting. So
that's the power of the cover.
So if she was gonna read it, where would she get it?
You would probably take her to Jim Hanley's universe, and she would run screaming from the premises. but not before picking up her bag. That is one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores, you might know. Jim Hanley's universe offers the best selection of titles, comic book titles, and related merchandise. They got mainstream and manga and minis and every kind of comic book you can imagine. They have it all. If you're in New York City, you simply must go. Go visit this place where art and literature meet. That's Jim Hanley's universe, and you can that's basically just south of the Empire State Building on 33rd Street and 5th. If you're in Midtown Manhattan, or if you happen to find yourself crossing the Verrazano and you think, well, I need to pull off and get some comics. Well,
what am I doing here?
You go to 325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island. We're going to get calls. Stop slagging off the Staten Island store. When you're there, tell them iFanboy sent you, which a lot of you have.
I'm not slagging off the store. I'm slagging off the area surrounding the store.
Yeah. No, let them know iFanboy sent you, and they actually let us know that people have been doing that. So we really do appreciate that if you went there and told them that. So you can go and visit them at jhuniverse.com or on MySpace at myspace.com/jhuniverse. Again, that's art and literature. They meet there.
Yeah, awesome.
More
like
often
an
in
access
Manhattan.
Point.
Yes.
So
you know who's having a comeback?
Who's having a comeback?
A huge comeback. Who? Steve McNiven.
Yeah, hardcore. Well, we need to get something out of the way. Okay, so Amazing Spider-Man is now out every 3 weeks, right? It's almost essentially a month. Three times a month. We're not going to talk about it every issue. It just seems that way right now, but at some point we're gonna skip a couple issues. So just Spider-Man fans out there, Steve McNiven, wow, I can't
really
believe it.
Good this one. Yes. He was good last week. There's a couple of Spider-Man shots.
Why was he so late on Civil War if he can put this book out weekly?
Because they've had like a month lead time on this book.
No, they've had like 4 months lead time. It was like it's been ready since like October or September. Jeez. Anyway. So, But yeah, no, the panels with him with Spidey in the costume were just like, I was like, oh my God, wow. You know, like it blew me away.
The one where he busts through the skylight and then the big page spread, the pinup shot.
Yeah, totally.
He can really draw Spider-Man.
Connor, they call that a splash page in the biz. So
I thought that was the first page.
Do you know something in the biz?
What I think was really
funny. Could you give me a meeting?
What I think is really funny is the last issue of the first page started off with Peter kissing a girl on the dance floor. This issue started off with Peter giving J. Jonah mouth to mouth, and they angled the page so it looks like they're kissing. Just like, I like that consistency, and like the weekly thing I dig. And this had, you know, like I really liked the title page, the cover treatment, you know, how we got the summary of what Spider-Man is and then the title and then the credits down at the bottom. And it had asterisks and editor notes in it, you know, like this feels like, I mean, I hate to say it, this feels like 20 years ago, but like today, you know. So
they do a really good job of identifying where you are and who people are.
Yeah.
And it's just it was a lot of fun. It's Spider-Man with the mafia, Spider-Man with the negative man, Spider-Man with a mugger.
Yeah.
I mean, This was just fun from beginning to end, and this was only reinforces that the last issue was good. This was better than the last issue.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a fun ride. So, all right, cool. Real quickly, I want to talk about the Umbrella Academy #5. This is getting close to finishing up. This one I thought was for me at least was probably the best issue so far of the series.
Is it getting better and better every month?
It is getting better and better every month, and it's building up towards something. It's building up towards a finale. You know, some stuff happened in this, not like major kind of movies. This is kind of the quiet before the storm, I think, the last issue. But I purely want to talk about it for one reason and one reason alone, because one of the characters – so the idea of the Umbrella Academy is a bunch of kids who were born with special powers who grew up together, and now they've reunited when their mentor dies. And one of them was missing and has returned, but he's not aged. He's still like a kid, but you get the idea that he's very smart. Like he's got an adult's brain inside of a kid's body. And he's in the office of their old mentor, and he finds his monocle, their mentor's monocle, and he's like, excellent. And he puts the monocle on, he's drinking coffee. And the little monkey, there's a monkey who talks, who was asking him, you know, where have you been all this time? You know, and he's like, it's too complicated to explain. And the monkey's like, why don't you try me? And the kid goes, well, I don't know where to begin. But I suppose I should start at the Kennedy assassination. And like that one line made me clap. Like it's just like it's like everything always goes like we were talking Teen Titans a couple of weeks ago. Everything goes back to Kennedy. Yeah. It's like amazing, you know. So
wait a minute. Wasn't Gerard Way an intern at DC?
Oh,
how many years ago?
Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe he read and he goes, well, no one's going to use this idea.
But the thing was, it was such a throwaway line because they never got to what it was, because then they get interrupted and then the story progresses. But I don't know. It's just been good. And
I'm actually really looking. I'm going to buy the trade. I'm really looking forward to
I got to give Gabriel Ba and Dave Stewart credit that the title page on this is like it's almost. The two-page spreads of the title page in each issue are almost spirit Ian. They're like Eisner Ian. Spiterian. This beautiful two-page spread of what's going on. And these huge.
No, I don't think it's either.
Yeah, this huge, huge text, and like I just love the look of it, and it's really good. I'm impressed with it. So,
Cookian.
Another book real quickly that I've been enjoying, which I think I'm the only one reading because I'm the only one who cares about the Luna Brothers anymore, but is The Sword. Are you guys reading it or no?
No.
Okay. Sword #4 came out, and basically, the story is progressing along. There's this girl's family is killed by these people, and it turns out because her dad was holding the sword, and she was a cripple. And when she holds the sword, all of a sudden she can walk, and then she can use the sword to kill people, and she heals as this magical sword type thing. And apparently, her father was in hiding. And so now she's trying to get to the truth of it. And coming off of Girls, which meandered and really kind of got out of its way, I thought the Luna Brothers were really kind of focused on this one, and it's progressing at a much better pace. And I love their art.
Girls
so.
Was a long
24 issues. Like, yeah, it was yeah. forever.
How long is this one?
I don't know exactly how long the series is, but we're on issue 4, so I'm right there with it. So,
you know what I've been worried about all week? God, tell me what happened to New X-Men 46.
This was New X-Men 46 was the everybody in one room, have them fight issue.
Yeah,
which was fun. I have to admit. I mean, it was literally everyone in one room, and they fought.
You know, it's interesting. This so far, this story reminds me of, and I'm gonna go way back into the X-Men vault quickly. There was after the Extinction Agenda. in the early in the late 80s, early 90s, before the X-Men reboot with X-Men number one and all that kind of stuff, there was a brief storyline that ultimately was the one with X-Factor that I believe they fought on Muir Island. It might have been in New York. I might have the two stories mixed up, but it ultimately ended with Cyclops' baby, Nathan, who became Cable, is infected with the techno-organic virus, and he gives her to a woman who comes from the past to take Cable into the future to heal him. And that was the moment that Cable goes in the future, and that's when the conflict departed. This issue had a strong feeling. I felt like that storyline, that issue. And of course, I loved it, you know, like, because it was just like, it's the second to last, you know, issue in the storyline. Honestly, I'll step back and be an adult about it. We don't have any more answers than we had last week, right?
Or the week before. I find it interesting that they're ending this crossover in X-Men and not Uncanny X-Men next month.
Yeah, well, because apparently Uncanny X-Men is the epilogue, because the X-Men, it's like X-Men No More, and apparently the Uncanny X-Men are breaking up, and I don't know what.
I'm worried that they're not going to have a completion to this. It's going to lead to the next thing, which is you know, the multiple storylines.
That never happens in comics, so you're probably...
By completion, I mean some sort of answers to what has been happening.
Yeah.
Putting that aside, I thought it was a really fun issue, despite the appearance of Predator X, which is still stupid.
You see, and again, that's the my problem with Predator X is I feel like that's the one extra thing to give, like, the new X-Men relevance in the story, because I guess they fought him earlier. I don't read New X-Men, so, like, I don't know.
This is also the last issue of New X-Men.
Yeah,
this is
Yeah, thank God. Jeez, kill that book. Wow, okay, everybody.
Everyone who's written into me saying, "Why do you hate New X-Men?" Now you write to Ron. I don't actually hate New X-Men. I don't care.
No, just that was the one book that I wanted to catch up on, and I just never had the time, and I never had the energy, and so now I don't have to. So, But anyway, so next week is the last issue. We'll find out. But you know, Cable and basically everybody's ended up in Muir Island, and Sinister's dead. We found out how Mystique killed him. We found out why Mystique was doing what she was doing. The baby was supposed to heal Rogue. The baby and Rogue touched. We don't know what happened. You know, and then Professor Xavier takes the baby, gives her to Cable, says take her to the future, which I think is just – which is awesome. I love when they play with the future. So anyway, so –
Josh, welcome back.
Thank you. You know, a while back, I think I got a lot of people to start reading Robin.
Yes.
Who wouldn't have done that before. And then Adam Beach left the book.
Yep.
And then it wasn't as good. Well, Chuck Dixon is back on the book. And I said to Connor, is this a new story? He said, yes. So I picked it up. I'm very glad I did. I can go ahead and say you people can go ahead and get back on Robin.
Sorry.
You have my apologies for that. Basically, this is, again, just like every other time that Robin came out, it was just like, it's just a rollicking sort of, it's a fun time, there's a mystery. I really love the Tim Drake character a lot.
Yeah.
And then this time I'd like to say that I really did like Freddie E. Williams' work on it. Mm-hmm. One thing where he suffered was he dressed the kids funny.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, I felt that the kids look more like regular teenagers for the most part.
Well, I think what's funny is I read this book and I closed it and I said, wow, you know, it's really interesting that the most consistently good and entertaining and solid book up and down in the Batman universe for the last however many years has been Robin. And this
Easily.
Is no exception. This is really – Chuck Dixon is basically the guy who created Robin, Tim Drake. He didn't actually create Tim Drake, but he made him into a character. He wrote basically every book he was in for years. He's been gone for a while. He's back. He's got a good handle on the character. He's got a good handle on Batman, who appears briefly in the book. He's brought back Robin's supporting cast a little bit, who used to be in the book and had disappeared. And I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, it's just a fun book. And I really like – the book is even lighter in appearance, like the color palette that they use.
A little brighter.
It's all a little brighter. There's much – like the tones are a little more flat. It looks a little more like like animated coloring as opposed to, you know, the super detailed coloring. Mm-hmm. Overall, the art was pretty good. It was not spectacular. There was a couple pages that looked rushed.
It was two different pencilers.
Yeah. It got switched around, so I'm guessing it was rushed around. But either way, it's really good. Chuck Dixon knows what he's doing with this book. It's just going to get better.
Yeah.
Or it'll stay exactly the same, which is also okay.
They beat up Dan DiDio in the beginning. Checkmate 22 quickly, I thought was even better than the pick of the week issue that I had last month.
Yep.
I love Mademoiselle Marie. She's fantastic. And if you listen to the Word Balloon interview with Greg Rucka, I'm so sad that he didn't get to do the Mademoiselle Marie Vertigo book.
Yeah, that sounded like oh my god, that would have been really cool.
He pitched that would have been awesome. And this was just if you're not on Checkmate, get issue. This was 22. Get 21 and 22 and give it a read. This was one of the more brutal books I've seen in the DCU in a long time.
Yeah.
And we get
she beats a guy to death with a hammer, and just like.
And we get to see the Russian dude in the mech suit.
The Rocket Red.
Yeah, Rocket Red. Yeah, I love that guy. So.
Just Chris Samnee kicking ass all over the place in this book too.
Totally.
I have no problem with seeing more of his work.
Totally.
I loved this issue. This was fantastic.
It was really, really good. It would have been hard not to pick this one as pick of the week.
Cool. Yeah, I agree.
So if you're not getting Checkmate and you want to be getting Checkmate, maybe you need to talk to your comic book store and get them to start using FooComics.com. It's a great it's a new website that's got some great service to allow people to allow you to manage your pull list and your subscription. Stores can manage their customers, and you as your customer can manage your pull list. It was created by a comic collector, so he knows exactly what they know what you want and trying to give it to you, and it's totally free. So check out foocomics.com/ifanboy to learn more, and stores can sign up online, and then if your store is not using it, tell them to go check it out and enjoy it. It's fun times. So, foocomics.com/ifanboy.
Yes.
FOO. Email. Yay. It's been a while, but we brought the emails back for you. So,
go lead the first one off.
All right. Our first one comes from Steve, who writes in because he needs to vent on some of the folks in our circle. And by our circle, he doesn't mean the iFanboy circle, rather the general comic circle. A friend of his who lives in Nashville went to his local comic store wanting to pick up something Alan Heinberg had written in comics. This is a guy who probably never read a comic, but had heard about Alan Heinberg like because of his TV work and Grey's Anatomy and things like that. So when he asked about an Alan Heinberg comic, apparently the dicks at the store laughed at him and said some stupid crap like, what issue number? And in general acted like if the guy from The Simpsons. So what Steve wants to know is, why do we have to shoot ourselves in the foot? The guy's a fan of Grey's Anatomy and other stuff Heinberg has done, and yet let's act like insider dickheads. I mean, the guy's only written about 15 or 20 comics anyway. How hard would it be to be decent to a guy like this and win a customer? Just a rant, Steve. Yeah, we agree with you. That's sad.
It happens.
Yeah, it does, and it's amazing.
I think less than it maybe used to, but there's got to be those little stores that are on. I mean, basically the best, is if it's a bad store, go on the web and go to message board. Don't go to this store. Go to this one.
It just sucks because like if somebody like that who wanders into a comic store because they heard that the dude from Grey's Anatomy does something and then they get chased away, they're probably not going to go online. Like
they're never coming back to a comic book store.
That's what sucks. Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah.
It's every stereotype that they could possibly have thought of is going to now be true.
Right. So
that's really the sad thing.
Yeah.
It's almost like they do more damage than a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie.
Exactly. So
and I don't know if we need that.
All right. Well, let's hear the next email. What do we need?
Lewis writes and says, "Queen and Country, gents. Damn, this may be the best book I've ever read. Holy cow! I picked up issue volume one at Jim Hanley's Universe, and I'm 75% done with it. Thanks for the recommendation. So what's next?"
It's volume two.
Lewis has a good question. What's next?
Well, first of all, agreed. Queen of Country is.
Sorry. I really hurt myself there.
You're
what
right?
did you do?
I went to put my foot on the radiator, but I knocked the thing off. And it's okay, though. It's fine. I'm gritting my teeth. I'm fighting through it.
Right.
How's your TIE fighter? Is that okay?
You know what's funny is I was just holding that. I've lost part of the... Anyway.
It's a callback to episode one.
Anyway.
Queen of Country is excellent. You are correct.
Yes.
What's next? How about Checkmate? We were just talking about it.
Yeah, go check it out.
If you like Queen and Country and you didn't check out that, or Whiteout, if you haven't done that yet, pretty much anything with Greg Rucka's name on it is fantastic. In that same way, although nothing.
There's also he's got some books coming out. He's got an Oni Press PI book coming out soon.
That sounds like it's gonna be awesome. Stumptown.
Yeah, Stumptown
coming out this July.
So keep your eye out for that. But there's also, that volume didn't encompass all of Queen Country, I don't believe. So volume two should be out, assuming at some point. But there's a lot of stuff out there. But Checkmate is probably number one on the list.
Or Whiteout.
Whiteout, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Whiteout's going to be a movie soon, isn't it?
Yes, it is, in about a year.
So yeah. Go get the books now before they put what's-her-name's face on them.
Kate Beckinsale.
Kate Beckinsale. Kate Beckinsale.
You're going to get the photo cover.
Yeah.
In about a year and a half, when it's out on DVD, you can get it. You'll be able to get it on your Netflix, because they've got 75,000 titles, one of which will be Whiteout. They have no late fees and free shipping both ways with fast delivery and plans starting as low as $4.99 a month. Netflix, www.netflix.com/iFanboy gets you a two-week free trial at Netflix.
All right, cool. So if you have any questions or anything you want to email us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We love to get the email, and we try to reply to everybody. And also, your email might get picked to be answered in our weekly letter column that's every Friday on ifanboy.com. So be sure to check that out. All right, cool. So on to the voicemail. Our first voicemail comes from John from Brooklyn, who wants to know if we're reading a specific book.
Hey, guys. What's going on? It's John from Brooklyn. I was just calling to see if any of you have checked out Simon Dark from DC. I think issue 5 comes out this week, and it's pretty cool. You know, he's a kind of an unusual superhero that, you know, takes place in Gotham City, so I'm wondering when him and Batman are ever going to, you know, cross paths and stuff like that. But, if you haven't checked it out, give it a try, and I'd love to hear what you think about it. All right, take care, guys. Later.
We had a very persistent listener, the Freaky Tiki, who sent us issues 1 and 2.
Freaky Tiki! Sorry.
Because we hadn't talked about it. It's one of his favorite books. So I read both of them, and I wrote a review for it on ifanboy.com. So if you go there, you search Simon Dark, you can find it. But a brief recap of that review is it's Steve Niles and the artist Scott Hampton, I believe. I might be wrong about that. I don't have the books with me. The art was great. The story is this crazy vigilante in a certain section of Gotham City. I did not love it. I thought it was okay, but I thought setting it in Gotham City, while I understand from a publishing point of view, hurt the story in itself because it didn't make sense that Batman would let this guy go around killing people under the guise of vigilantism. He would be on top of that in a second. So that took me out of the book.
So stupid. Where's Batman?
had it been like a Vertigo horror superhero book, that might have been a different story. But yeah. The setting took me up. I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay. I keep hearing good things. If I continue to hear good things, maybe I'll give it another look. But for now, I'm not picking it up.
Yes. So and if
the lesson to be learned here is that you're not checking iFanboy.
Exactly. Yes. So because we'll throw up a link to Connor's review in the show notes for this episode, so you can check that out. But you got to iFanboy. You got to be reading it every day, right, Josh?
The thing is, well, we can't listen. We try to talk about all the books we can here, and then on the video show and all that stuff. But even then, we can't cover everything. So iFanboy, almost every day, there's something else up there, and it might be book reviews of stuff we didn't do, or opinions, or like this week we argued about Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
So
and you won that argument.
I did. Anyway,
well, I don't know. You're still buying, I'm still not. Might be a stalemate.
To our next voicemail from the Spider-Man backlash continues.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Matt from Simi Valley, California. Just calling. I just read the new Spider-Man issue, the Brand New Day or whatever. I really enjoyed the issue, but in the back of the book where I was talking about what the new status quo is, that one part where it's like nobody knows who Spider-Man is, but now, you know, some people, you know, recall Spider-Man revealing, but they don't know who the face was behind the mask, who revealed themselves. And there's no video cameras or anything to look back on that. None of the Avengers know his identity. It's like, I love the new storyline, but I just, this whole reboot, it's just, you're wondering how it fits in with the rest of the universe. So, whatever. Just wanted to kind of vent about that. But, alright. Love the show, guys. Keep it up. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah, you know, the more I think about Spider-Man, the less I enjoy the issue. So, I'm trying not to think about
it. Oh, stop.
I'm trying not to think about it. He's right. I until I know what Bendis handles the Avengers issue and stuff like that. And Josh made a great point when this all happened, when Brand New Day came out, is that they talked about how great Unmasking Spider-Man was in Civil War, and it didn't even last a year.
You can't blame it on the Spider-Man book. That's just Marvel dropping the ball on that whole thing.
The issues,
they weren't ever going to deal with it, though.
Right, I know. The issues have been great. Don't get me. That's why I'm saying I'm trying not to think about it. You know, so get off my back.
But it's nothing new. Wally West used to have a public identity, and then the Spectre came along and erased it. Everybody's
memory. Yeah, do you remember that? That was crazy. And Jeff Johns did that. So we were like, "Oh, this is fantastic!"
And I think it was fantastic again. And this is what they do. Mephisto erased the tapes. It's not like a big, shocker.
If Jeff Johns, a lot more okay.
Yeah. So we got a lot of Spider-Man voicemails.
We did. Here's one. Here's one more.
This is Daryl talking through the streets of New York, and I'm angry. At Quesada, make him pay. Don't buy Spider-Man. Don't touch Spider-Man. Not even Ultimate Spider-Man. Don't buy any Spider-Man titles so that he can learn and feel our anger. Secret Invasion better be good, too.
And Mr. Flanagan, when you received this voicemail on the 17th of January, 2008, why didn't you report it to the police? And remember, you are under oath.
Listen, I didn't know where this guy was. Listen to his voice. It's cold. It's chilling. If he knows where I live, if he knows where my wife works, if he knows where my kids – well, I don't have kids, but either – listen to him. Would you call? I was scared out of my mind.
I feel like this is our future. We're going to be in court with ties on as material witnesses to some sort of crime.
It's starting to cross the line. I just want them to I want the court reporter to read it back. Mr. Richards, what made you think this Daryl would – was?
Mr. Richards, I don't know.
I don't know.
Was Secret Invasion in fact any good? I don't know. So you're saying that he was right? I'm not willing to say that.
Mr. Richards, you are under oath.
Would Bendis get subpoenaed?
Okay, it was not good. I agree, it's not good.
I'm sorry.
He stalks out of the courtroom.
Oh, God.
Justice has been done.
Oh, Daryl, what are we going to do? It sounded like he was like his whole family was asleep and he was like in the kitchen trying to call in at like 12:30 at night.
Oh, he's not really trying to sound menacing at all. It's just that he has neighbors who can hear everything.
Exactly. Paper thin walls.
That sucked to play Rock Band for him.
Oh, God.
Right. Oh. I noticed you conveniently skirted the whole Bendis thing.
Yeah, Daryl, we didn't hear for your reaction to Bendis calling you out a couple of weeks ago. Come on, man. So
he just said to boycott his book, though.
But
That's a subtle call out.
But you know what? He called for a total boycott of all things Spider-Man. That's like crazy.
You burned the DVDs.
But you know what Daryl did do with that voicemail is he kept it succinct. And that's what we like at iFanboy.
So, it's a theme here of the week.
If you want to call the voicemail line, please call them in, 1-888-FANBOYS, 326-2697, but keep your voicemails limited to about 30 seconds or so, because we've gotten some very long ones. In fact, I listened to one today about Star Wars comics that was over 5 minutes long. We're not going to play that. I'm sorry. It was informative.
But thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It was informative, but it's not good radio, or whatever this is. So so keep it at 30 seconds, but please keep calling in. It's been a tidal wave of voicemails. We love it. So 1-888-FANBOYS. So.
Yes. Well, that's it.
Yes, it is.
Connor's not actually doing the end part.
If you want to buy things, go to ifanboy.com/store. You've got our picks there, our video show picks, and you can use the Amazon link to buy your Amazon purchases through the store.
Anything from Amazon. You click on that, it goes to Amazon. Whatever you buy, that works too. Because there were some questions about that. You're there. That means you're at ifanboy.com, which we were talking about earlier. We are really making an effort to put up a lot of stuff for you to read and content and stuff for you guys to talk about. So please make sure to stop by the site every day. That's ifanboy.com, where there's always the pick of the week on Wednesday nights or very, very early Thursday morning. So go there.
Yeah. And you can also head over there on Saturdays to check out our video show, which also comes out on revision3.com/ifanboy. And you can watch our fantastic video podcast where this past week you probably watched our voicemail episode, and then we'll see, and then next week it's the show you've all been waiting for. Josh, what's next week's video show?
Listen, I'm very sad and I don't know what book to read. I've been on tour for Love Song all this time. And that, yeah.
We're talking Neil Gaiman's Sandman next week. Finally, you guys, it's come. Vicious Smith, I think, is gonna be interested in this show. A lot of people are going to be interested in it.
The show, a year in the making.
Yes. So, Sandman, we hope we deliver.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting one. Yeah. And if you find yourself without a shirt while you watch the show, you can always go to jinx.com/ifanboy.
It's like I'm sitting down. All right, here we go. I'm watching it. Wait a minute, I'm cold.
Shit, where'd my shirt go? Tap.
Hand me my credit card.
So jinx.com/ifanboy. You can get an ifanboy t-shirt. Ifanboy in the front, intern on the back. Join the intern crew and take a picture of yourself with the shirt, without the shirt, whatever.
There's emailing of us that happens when you type contact@ifanboy.com into that field. Or if you have a phone and you want to dial 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, that leads to a place where you can record a message for us.
Yes. Under 30 seconds long.
Under 30 seconds long, unless you just want to talk to us.
No, please don't do that.
Can't guarantee listen to the whole thing.
Or if you are the internet type and you're on MySpace or ComicSpace or Verb or Facebook or Twitter, you can be our friend or follow us or do whatever you can. Go to those respective places, and it's a good time.
And if you like the show, you can write a review on iTunes or for this one or for the video show. And better yet, tell your friends and the people at the comic store the local haberdasherer. You might like it.
I need a tie. Where can I go? Oh, the haberdashery district.
You find yourself watching the show and you find you're not wearing a tie. So we always mention ifanboy.com/donations. Maybe you should think about stopping by.
Yes.
He was rifling through his wallet right now. Jesus, I feel bad. I haven't done anything.
That's the show.
I'm so tired.
I gotta get back to work. I got
long day tomorrow.
He's replying to people on Dig.
No.
All right. Good night.
I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I am Josh.
Finally, not a witty comment.
I didn't, as I told you, I'm tired. I never said any of them were witty.